How are you doing?
I actually got some of that.
What if I talk like that for the whole podcast?
I challenge you to talk like that for the whole podcast.
Like the Muppets podcast.
Hey, everybody.
Do my intro like that.
All right.
Welcome to Rated NA 33 for the website nerdappropriate.com. We are here again on a Saturday afternoon this time.
Yeah.
Not as early.
Yeah. I'm feeling it.
I'm liking this early Saturday podcasting.
It's definitely better than the Thursday night's work because I was pretty zombified.
What are you talking about? You're always totally with it on Thursday night.
Whatever. I was sleepwalking. Don't listen to episodes 1 through 25.
25.
It was like snoring.
And then there's like 5 in there where I was like mid-moving and doing other things. There were some heinous ones, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But we're 33 now.
We are. That's pretty crazy. We're coming up on our year anniversary pretty soon.
Coming up, yeah. Well, ish.
A month or two, right?
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
I think time flies.
Right before Halloween, I think, is our first podcast.
I think just to throw it back, we should just do it in your cave again for
the
1 year anniversary.
It's relatively mobile. I mean, we can just pack this shit
up. It's pretty crazy.
Move it.
That's good stuff. So how are you gentlemen doing?
Doing all right.
Yeah.
We're doing, actually, Matt and I, you commented on this, we're finally finishing Gears of War 2.
Yeah. Yeah, I messaged you guys on Xbox Live.
And let me tell you, there's, like, I think I said to Matt, I was like, this game has a little bit of everything in it.
It really does.
And Matt was like, yeah, and by everything, I mean stuff that shouldn't be in the game at all.
Oh, like the rockworm?
Yeah.
The rockworm, the driving the car mission.
Oh, the
or the tank
operation. Oh, the driving the tank mission after the rockworm.
Yeah. We did the part where you drop down into the pit and all the lights go out.
Yeah,
the car stops. And
that
then
part's hard, man.
These three spiders appear, and I thought I was shooting them.
Did you co-op the game or no?
Yeah, we did.
See, I drove, and he was the gunner.
Yeah.
It's like mindless. It's so boring when you're driving because it's slow. First of all, the tank's not fast, so you're just like barely plodding along.
Oh, there are definitely some parts that needed improvement, but
it gets a little hilarious when I have to use the flashlight.
Yeah.
And Matt has to
like
drive.
He has a light, so we're like trying to mentally signal each other which way I'm looking to go, and
he's
turning the light. I mean, the game is miles above Gears of War 1,
yeah.
I think, and I think co-oping obviously makes it better.
Oh,
too.
We're having a great time. It's
good.
It's fun. Like, it is a lot of fun, and I did say to Scott, I was like. Because he made the point, he was like, you know, I didn't realize how good Gears was until you played.
I played Resistance 1.
Resistance.
Oh, yeah.
That game is terrible.
And I said to him, like, and as much as you might argue this, I don't know if you would at all, but I said to him, like, there's a reason Halo and Gears are, like, the vaulted, like, or vaunted, like, vaunted? Is that a word? Vaulted?
Voluptuous
games that they are. But I mean, they're both seriously good shooters. Like
Absolutely.
They're both like phenomenal shooters.
I would never argue with that.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, don't they both have like Microsoft Studios like stamps on them?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
They
kinda,
both do.
Kind of that's kind of cool that like the games that Microsoft pushes are also good.
Yeah.
They just
I think they put a lot of faith in those developers. Absolutely.
And if you remember correctly, the first Mass Effect game was also a.
Microsoft
published game,
which is why PlayStation will never ever have it.
Yep.
Wah, wah.
Yeah.
Isn't Call of Duty also?
I don't think so. I think Call of Duty has always been multi-platform. Let's run down what we're going to talk about today, because I know people.
Well, hold on. I was
going to
say
like
you messaged us.
While you
messaged us while we were playing Gears. You said ground aliens. This is always our joke. Ground aliens is greater than space aliens.
Yes.
And my reply back was, "This game is nothing but a euphemism for Cliffy B's penis."
Yes, especially if you're on the rockworm level. It's like, this rockworm's the biggest rockworm you'll ever see.
And you cut
world.
Through walls a lot that end up looking like vaginas.
Yeah, there's a lot of.
And I think maybe the last thing that I'll say about this is that for Gears 3, Smash Ball guy better be voiced by Tracy Jordan, because that's essentially who he is. Yeah. We get home, mommy, some chicken wings. You're like, what are you talking about, dude?
It's so random.
Like everything in the game, he says, he's like, yeah, baby, we're gonna shoot these guys. And I'm like,
that's a pretty good culture.
Yeah, you
impression.
Do a decent culture.
Yeah,
he's like the most beloved character in the franchise.
Oh, he's awesome. But
the thing is, the guy that plays him looks pretty identical to him and acts.
We
pretty
met him.
Identical
I
to
saw him in 7-Eleven at Comic Con.
Yeah, we really? Did. Yeah. He's like, thanks for coming to 7-Eleven, baby. Yeah. You're like, whoa.
His energy is appreciated
in
this game. For
and I found myself laughing like plenty of times where like the sense of humor is just so over the top ridiculous that like there are times where I'm laughing at it being ridiculous, but I'm laughing, you know? Like I definitely the game 2 has won me over a lot more than 1 ever did.
I mean, you got a chainsaw and a gun. That's pretty much, you know. Yeah. That mechanic.
And everything's not gray.
That's true. Yeah.
The first one is like just like a grayscale like game, mm-hmm. and I feel like this game they actually put color in it, so you can see what's going on around
Agreed.
You. And
Agreed.
So we'll
so
get
much
there.
Better. We'll get there. Good. I think we're at 17. Like, I think we're at what are they called episodes or whatever.
I think we've gone through about 20.
We're in the third arc.
Yeah.
I think I also mistakenly pre-ordered like 30 copies of the game. Yeah. Over the course
You're gonna
of
have
the
like
past,
10 copies
I,
of
I,
Gears 3.
I'm dead serious. I went into the store the other day just to check on like what I had pre-ordered. He's like, you have 3 copies of Gears pre-ordered. And then I'm like, I think I got one online, like a special edition. I don't know. So, hey, we'll all have copies.
Sure.
Yeah, there you go. So, whatever.
So, it'll be fun. But I am enjoying it. The Gears hater is enjoying the game. So.
Awesome. So we got some news today. We're going to be talking about Google buying Motorola. We're talking about some BioWare news from Gamescom, which is going on right now as we speak. Some on-set video leaks from both the Avengers set and the Batman set. And then Matt's going to review something called A Day in the Life. And we're all going to talk about the new season of Felicia Day's web series, The Guild, as well as, if we have time, a new podcast called Girl on Guy, which is not a porno webcast, which would be awesome.
Never mind.
Yeah.
I watched the wrong one.
Damn. You in the article I wrote about, I was like, just don't Google that because it'll lead to some bad stuff. And then our open thread is about game endings, and we had some folks reply to that, so we're going to talk about
it. And it will, we are going to say up front, be spoiler full.
Spoiler full, especially when we get to the game ending. So.
Nothing recent, probably. Well, maybe, but we'll get there. So let's kick it off. The first bit of news is kind of a small one. Well, I mean, it's a big one, I guess, in the way that it got done. But HP is actually shutting down WebOS, which they literally bought 6 months ago, I think. They've launched one tablet and I think one phone, or I don't even know if the phone's even come out yet. And they basically said, hey, we moved into the tablet market. The iPad destroys everything. We can't keep up. We're shutting it down.
Ouch.
And they actually, in the same press release, hinted at the fact that they're possibly looking to sell off their computer division, too.
Wow. That's pretty intense.
And they are the largest computer manufacturer in the country.
So do you think they're just backing down simply due to Apple, or do you think it's...
That's what their reasoning has all been. Apple's created the post-PC world, and Apple's owning it. And
I don't think I would argue with that, but I think there is still a place for HPs and for Gateways and for Dells. I think they all sell relatively well.
Well, I'll tell you what, HP, because personally I have an experience with this, but HP's customer service totally sucks.
Okay. Yeah.
As far as their website goes for like pricing out computers, like among the criteria that most people would be interested in, the way you can filter it, like that really sucks too. So, I mean, aside from actually having the machine in front of you, which I do have a HP laptop, there's not, I feel like they don't really have a lot going for them.
Well, I remember back in the 90s when I used to really care a lot about PCs and I would build my own and everything. If you had a PC as like your gaming computer in the 90s and early 2000s, you were like a loser. You know, you're like, you have an HP, you know, and it had like a fucking like yellow case and like a crank on the side.
Yeah.
They changed a lot since then. And I think now they're pretty solid, but
I mean, it's interesting what they're alluding to is interesting to me as far as saying like, well, Apple won. Like, I mean, they're basically admitting defeat and just saying we're done. And they haven't really put a whole lot into the game as far as tablets and WebOS goes. And the really sad thing is anybody that's used WebOS, it's actually a pretty good OS.
It's really good.
Yeah, really solid.
I looked at the Palm Pre for Verizon when I was shopping for a phone like a couple of years ago. And like, it was amazing. It works super well. It's really intuitive, like really easy. It's different from like the iOS, like icons and apps kind of thing. It's like, You know, you can switch between the pages, and like the sliding was really natural. I don't know.
In related news, in a way, the next bit of news is that Google this week, kind of on Monday, shocked literally everybody. Like every Google podcast or news article that I read and stuff, you know, usually they know. Usually, like, people are like, yeah, we knew Google was going to do this, you know, a little bit ahead of time. No one saw this coming. Google bought Motorola's phone division for $12 billion.
It's ridiculous.
I think, I heard that has something to do with patent protection as well.
Part of it is patent. Google is getting into the patent game now because they have had a lot of issues.
Apparently, you can't just go around stealing stuff.
That doesn't work anymore. It's not like they're stealing. I think Google's ethos of being open and just doing stuff and, you know, like, oh, we made an OS, it's open, here you go, and releasing it works in certain segments, but when you get into the big guys game, you know, and Apple owns patents literally everything that they do. I think Apple patents like Steve Jobs shits. Like, they're just like, well, it was an interesting looking shit, let's patent that one today, you know, like that is a big deal. Patents are becoming a really big issue right now for Google, so that was part of why they bought Motorola. The thing that I think is interesting is that what Steve Jobs said a little while ago when they released the iPad was that they really feel like their success is due to the fact that they control the hardware and the software, that they can create this cohesive, singular experience by themselves that no one else can touch. And I would not be able to really argue that. I mean, it's pretty true. And I think Google buying Motorola is somewhat of, I think we're going to start seeing, Motorola makes good phones. I have one.
Yeah.
And they're solid fucking phones.
Razor.
But what sucks about what sucks about the phones is that they're Motorola's phones, and they have all this preloaded software and this junk on there because they have to, it basically pays for the phone.
Yeah. I tell you what, I really am sick of phone manufacturers putting their own UI elements on top of vanilla Android.
Unless they're super solid. Like HTC's okay. Sprint's is okay, Samsung's is okay. Yeah, Motorola's is fucking horrible. Motorblur is god awful.
Well, I mean that stuff was useful when Android was new, but Android is mature enough to the point now that you don't need HTC Sense anymore. You just need vanilla Android, and it runs just fine.
I think this is Google motioning, and they haven't really said one way or the other. They've kind of hinted to the fact that this is patent protection. They've also kind of hinted to the fact that they aren't going to completely take over Motorola.
Yeah.
But I have a hard time seeing them not release all, like, from now on, all of the Nexus phones will be Motorola phones, you know? Yeah. Like, I don't know why they wouldn't be. Why would they give that license to Samsung still?
Well, what does this do for the partners? Like, what are the partners supposed to think about this? Like HTC and Samsung?
At some point though, you know, I mean, here's the reality. The reality is Google released an OS and did what Google does, which was put it out for free and just run over the competition by just throwing as many copies of it as they can. And Apple still holds strong. They basically, I would say Android's the reason WebOS died. They can blame Apple if they want, but really the thing is that this other one came out and just everybody bought into it. But what Google's about to be facing is Windows and Nokia, Apple, and then now they're out there just floating with no actual
hardware. So they're kind of like shoring up the fort a little bit.
I think so. Because Windows supposedly was making a play for Motorola too.
I tell you what, I mean, all I want is a vanilla Android phone on good hardware, and if this is what this leads to, then that's great.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's going to be the same, you know, as it was in the PC. I guess it's still this way in the PC market, where if you buy a PC from a manufacturer, the first thing you think about doing is just like, oh, I'm just going to wipe the hard drive and install a fresh copy of Windows 7, because I know there's bullshit on it, like when you buy it, you know.
And you can't on phones. That's the unless you root them.
Right, but with HTC recently announced that all of their future phones will have unlocked bootloaders.
But Motorola had just announced that all of their future phones would have locked bootloaders that you could not root, and that's what mine just got updated. I can't root it now.
I see.
You know, I think it's interesting. It's a weird market to be watching, to see these very gigantic players. Also in the news, this is very minor, but I'll just say it. Apple's total net worth is greater than all of Europe's like banking worth or something.
That's ridiculous.
It was some insane number. I'd have to look it up again, but basically their total net worth of you know, their total income was like the same, was equal to like Europe. It was just insane what those numbers are pulling. So I don't know. I'm happy about it because I like my Motorola phone. And I would love to see Google
get it. All I want
it,
is so. Vanilla Android. This is
it's going to be a year or two
this
off.
This is the end game right now.
It'll be a year or two before we see anything anyways. Apple will have four new phones out by then.
There you go. This October, iPhone 5 does some crazy
it's
shit.
It's 1 millimeter thin.
Whoa. I feel like I'm going to break
it
this
thing. It has seven cameras.
There you go.
It you literally farts magic.
Can I just get it embedded into my wrist and then just like make phone calls?
Not unless you have to white plastic your entire arm.
I could probably do that.
Yeah.
That's cool. I would look like a Jedi Knight a little bit.
Yeah.
Clone Wars era Jedi Knight.
Sure.
Yep. Sweet.
So BioWare from Gamescom.
Yeah, this stuff is all happening right now. And the news this morning was...
In Deutschland,
yeah.
Did we not have any in the travel budget to send anybody to Germany?
Yeah, I kind of talked about that. I'm like, that's a little bit out of the... That would kind of break the bank.
Seattle's a stretch right now.
Yeah, pretty much.
Germany's not going to cut it.
I checked our overhead, and there wasn't enough in the overhead account to send anybody.
We would be several thousand in a very deep hole at this point. First of all, Gamescom... They reached capacity, and they actually had to shut the convention down for a few hours.
Oh, wow.
The fire marshal shut down the whole thing. I guess the convention only holds...
Did I see a picture of like thousands of people standing
outside? They couldn't get in. So it has a capacity of, I think, of 62,000, which is pretty big for a gaming convention. Yeah. And it maxed out, and they're like, nobody else can come in. You're shut down. So that was kind of crazy. BioWare has been having panels about Dragon Age series and about the Mass Effect series for a couple days. And it's weird. Like, I went to watch some of the panel footage, and the panels are super small at Gamescom. Like, it looks like a high school classroom. There's, like, seriously, like, 30 seats.
Wow.
Like, I don't know if their games aren't as big over there or if it's just super hard to get in. I have no idea, but with a... crowd of 60,000 and room for 50 people on a panel, it's really small and exclusive, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Some stuff that's not really spoilers. Let me just ask Scott, like, what stuff would you like to see come out of the...
I thought you were gonna ask him what he wanted to hear right now.
No, I'm not gonna tell you any spoilers.
I was gonna say I could tell you what I don't want to hear.
Yeah, I know. I won't tell you that. But what would you like to see out of future Dragon Age DLC? If you had to just choose, like pick and choose what you...
I think, if I spoke for myself and to a greater extent the fans, I think somebody would want to see DLC with Liliana.
Okay. Well, that's amazing because it just so happens that they just kind of let slip that's probably going to happen in the next DLC. There are a lot of questions about... One of the questions a German fan asked was, hey, is Liliana going to be in any of the DLCs? And... the guy, Fernando, who was actually answering all the questions, he said, a lot sooner than you think. It looks like Liliana will probably be in the next chunk of DLC. They also said that they're going to be producing a lot less DLC than Dragon Age Origins. Dragon Age Origins had a lot, but a lot of it was really short.
Okay.
And so there's going to be less DLC than Origins, but of higher quality. So they want to make it all around the same quality as Legacy.
The Legacy was pretty like long as far as the campaign goes, and the environments were varied and different from what was in the main campaign, which is great too.
And I thought it was fun. Like, it just it had a great pacing to it, you know.
I felt like I connected more with the story, or at least like the sort of the transitional nature of the story of Dragon Age 2 than I did the first one.
Okay, see, that's awesome. That's another... somebody asked that question as well, like, why do you feel like a lot of fans identified more with the first game than the second game? And Fernando actually said he thought the second game had a more intimate narrative, you know, because it's all about family and it's all about you, like, kind of coming up in the world. And it's less of that giant epic scope, you know, save the world. And it's more about, like...
And I like that.
Yeah, I kind of did too.
And I also thought that, like, you know, towards the end, you sort of get thrust into the bigger world picture, but the story, this particular story, is still about your character.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I thought was neat. I like the departure.
Yeah, I did too. They also said that the new DLC will probably take you to other cities that have been talked about, like Starkhaven, where Sebastian's from.
I'm going to punch him in the face.
Yeah, I didn't really get along. I was super excited for that DLC character, and he was such a prick. I could not freaking... In all my playthroughs, I never really got a chance to like that character.
I think we talked about this last time, but I mean, there were a couple characters in that game where I tried really hard to get these people like to be nice. Like, it's like I tried to be nice to you and you're still a dick. So yeah, you're get the F out, you know?
Yeah, he was just so I mean, in the world of Dragon, he was just super religious and he was like, right, he wouldn't back down from it. So that didn't really match up. So anyway, there was a lot of stuff coming from BioWare. We put a link to some of the videos up on the site, so you can go check them out. Some of the BioWare stuff from Gamescom, and I think they have another new Mass Effect 3 announcement today, which we'll probably have up on the site at some point. So,
and I said to Scott, because I've been watching the Mass Effect videos, if you are worried about spoiler info at all on Mass Effect, I wouldn't watch any of those videos.
Yeah,
they all have little things in them that if you know the story well enough, you're like, okay.
There's some tidbits for sure.
Little heads up on that.
Yes.
So I have actually seen stills of these next things that we're talking about.
Okay.
But I haven't seen the videos that I know you have posted.
Ah, yeah. The on-set leaks from the Avengers and from Batman. Basically, in today's day and age, it's really, really hard because all of us that have a cell phone, we have the capacity to take either still images or video. And so pretty much everybody on the planet has a fucking phone on them at all times, or a camera on them at all times. And so they're filming the Avengers pretty much right now as we speak.
In New York.
Is it in New York?
Yeah.
And
well,
I don't know.
From what I know, they were filming a chunk of it in New York.
It is some large city.
Yeah, it's a huge city.
It's some large city where they're filming. They have the streets all blocked off. One of the chunks of footage from the Avengers is somebody that like climbed up to like the 20th story of this building and is literally pointing a camera straight
Cleveland.
Down. As in Cleveland?
Yeah.
Okay. So they're pointing a camera straight down and filming this madness. But the thing that made me so happy about this leaked Avengers footage is how freaking amazing the fight choreography and stuff is with no special effects.
Yeah.
It's literally Chris Hemsworth and Chris Evans as Captain America and Thor beating down like a legion of guys fighting back to back. And they're all like bloody and their costumes are all fucked up. But they are seriously just like batting down like 20 stuntmen at a time. And it just looks phenomenal. And there's no special effects. And I'm already super excited about it.
Yeah.
The Batman footage was similar. I'm not going to spoil too much, but it is probably, it looks like a bunch of thugs and a bunch of cops fighting on the steps of some building and Batman and Bane fighting on the steps of a building. But it was probably no less than 100 people in one gigantic fist fight. And there's like snow machines going and it already looked insane on video. And I can't imagine how it's going to look on film. So.
I will say I finally watched Inception.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This past week.
Awesome.
And Nolan is just a fucking wizard. I don't even understand how he pulls off. Like, I posted something on my personal blog about the special effects scene of how they did the spinning hallway and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just insane.
Yeah.
He doesn't use CGI very often. Most of it's traditional. And the way he pulls everything off is just ridiculous.
And to give away Matt's personal blog, that's meathammer.com.
No, Meat Spin.
Oh, yeah, Meat Spin. That's right. Meatspin.com.
Don't go to that at work.
Please don't.
Don't sue us.
So yeah, some cool stuff. So definitely there are some movies that we'll be looking forward to coming out next year.
Definitely. I've been avoiding the footage just because I like to see it finalized.
I don't blame you. But if someone's like, hey, dude, you can see Captain America and Thor fighting right now, I'm like, click. All right.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take like 2 minutes.
All right.
That you won't know about because it's going to be 30 seconds of music or 20. And then we'll be right back with a couple reviews.
All right.
Hello again. All right, so reviews. We're doing some of those. The first one up is a show called A Day in the Life, which is a Morgan Spurlock produced, I believe, and narrated show that is the first exclusive content to Hulu. So Hulu bought, paid for, and had this show created for Hulu as a station, essentially.
I think that's pretty cool.
It is. Yes, as an idea. It's a great idea. I hope they keep doing stuff like this. So basically what it is Spurlock's team follows some pop culture kind of icon person for a day.
Okay.
And they just literally, they show the timeline, like from the moment he wakes up till the moment that person leaves or goes to bed.
Okay.
They follow every move of
and it's only pop culture icons?
So far. The first person they did was Richard Branson, owner of Virgin everything. Virgin
okay.
Mobile, Virgin
so
Airlines.
Super rich guy.
Super mega. I mean, probably, I think he's in the top 10 in the world, probably, of
like,
richness.
Yeah.
What I didn't know is it started out as a mail order music catalog.
No, I had no idea.
It was a record store first. That was the
first
thing he did.
I thought it was just a place
did,
that
and
you,
label.
Could, you could buy women that hadn't had sex with people.
No, that's a different thing. Although he did make probably about 7 virgin jokes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's a funny guy. But anyway, so it's interesting because it follows these people for a day. The next person planned is a comedian named Russell Peters. So they're going to actually follow him on a day of tour, which I think is kind of cool. They've talked about Will.i.am, the DJ Girl Talk, and some other people that they're going to follow at
okay.
the same time. So it seems like a wide swath of types of people. I kind of wish Richard Branson wasn't first.
Yeah, that does seem a weird first pick.
Because what ended up happening was we followed him when he was launching Virgin Airlines in America. So Virgin America, he was launching it. He was launching a new line to Chicago, and pretty much all it was a promo for him launching a new airline in Chicago. I mean, it literally felt like I watched a 30-minute commercial for Virgin Airlines.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, it you saw some insight into Richard Branson as a person, and you saw a little bit of that. But it felt very heavily behind like the shield of PR, and it felt very heavily like about the airline and not necessarily about him as a person and what his life is like. And he even says at the end of it, I wish you had followed me on a day. Like, I wish we had set
like
this up.
Like a normal day. Yeah.
Because he was talking, he was like, 90% of my time is taken up by doing philanthropic stuff. So he has like a ton of things that he has, like, he's launching like hospitals in Africa and, you know, reading programs and all. He does a ton of things that are just good, and they're good things that he does now, because he made the point. He's like, when you hit a certain point and you have so much money, he's like, you should be making the world better, and if you're not, you're a horrible person. Like, he was like, there's no reason, if you're in the billions, there's no reason that you're not making the world a better place for other people to live in.
Yeah.
So it was interesting in the sense of the way it was shot. It lacked a little bit of that kind of Morgan Spurlock feeling. It didn't really hit like an emotion.
And
like
he
usually
tends
does.
To inject a lot of humor, subtle humor into his stuff.
He was only really in the beginning and the end. He
really?
Like talked at the very beginning and he talked kind of at the end. I thought there was going to be more narration points from him, and there really wasn't. Cause he had a show on, I think, FX called 30 Days. And it basically took a person and put them in a situation for 30 days that they normally would not be a part of, and then let it play out. Like they like made a rich guy who, you know, like wealthy American guy live on minimum wage for 30 days.
Ah.
Put him in a rent controlled apartment and had him live on minimum wage. And it was like,
just sort of a wife swap-ish.
Yeah, but they also did other things. I mean, yes, it's that kind of idea. I think it was done a lot less
cheesy.
Yeah, it wasn't like, cheesy.
We'll take a Satanist and put it in a Christian house.
Well, I mean, they did stuff like that too. They did like you know, basically they put like a, not that he was a racist, but they put like a racist with a black family or something. Like they put people out of their element and then just let it play out. So it was interesting. But this show felt way more, and I'm really waiting. I was gonna wait to maybe do the review, but I wanted to talk about it because I think it's awesome that Hulu's buying content. That is the best part of all of this. Because I feel like the comedians that I saw a preview for the comedians episode, it looks a lot better. It looks more interesting. I have a feeling that, you know, Girl Talk or Will.i.am would probably have an interesting episode to watch. It just was weird that they led with this just insane billionaire who basically was advertising. He wasn't, but the show was advertising.
It almost just seems like
airline.
They just picked a bad day. You know what I mean? Like a day in the life, like just pick a day where the guy's doing what he does normally. You know, it's like, you're not going to pick a day. Like, let's just say, for instance, you do Will.i.am where he's like in the studio, because that would just be a day of studio footage. You're going
right.
to pick a day where he's kind of doing a mix of everything that he does. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah, they and the one thing that they did show that was interesting was, like, he started in London and then ended up in like New Mexico and then was in Chicago and then was like, he was in like 5 cities in a day. Like in one day, he was in five different places.
He does have his own airline.
Well, yeah, he has his own spaceship.
There you go. That'll do it.
And he's building a submarine line now too. He's got submarines.
Oh, of course. Why not? Why not?
So, but anyway, I mean, he's crazy rich, and kind of he seems like a really nice guy too. They actually showed everywhere he opens up a new thing, he goes and like meets the staff and like says hi to everybody. So it's like
that's cool.
This crazy billionaire showing up to like airline attendants who are like, hey, and he's like, hey, how's it going? Welcome to the company. And you're like, this is weird.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Interesting concept. I hope that Morgan Spurlock kind of gets more of his kind of thing into the show, because he definitely brings a lot of weight, I think, to it.
Spurlock's also bringing his next, I believe it's his next feature-length documentary.
Comic-Con
about
Comic-Con. Four.
It's going to be at the Toronto International Film Festival this month, which is cool. And I'd love to see it because we might be in it.
Wah, wah, wah.
Who knows? Walking past
around
the camera.
Yeah.
So this is the first one. Netflix is doing some of this stuff. Does that interest you guys? Does it make you happy that you have the services?
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm totally down. I like Morgan Spurlock, so I'll watch stuff like this. Although I feel like the whole MTV seems like they're great with a lot of their documentaries, even though some of them are kind of ridiculous. They kind of were. I hate to say it, but you know, back in the 90s with the Real World, they were the first, the first people to really do stuff like this.
Yeah.
But a lot of this, like what you were describing to me, feels like it's already kind of been done. Like you know what I mean?
It was a weird, when I saw it, I was like, that's a weird first series to launch. What I'm assuming is it was cheap.
Oh yeah, probably.
To produce. That was probably, sorry, I have like a sneeze. It was cheap to produce probably, which was probably easier to enter the market with something like that for original content.
Yeah. Cool.
It's kind of exciting. I mean, like if this is the start of, I feel like maybe with TV, you can introduce content one way, and maybe there are ways to introduce, you know, television shows, quote unquote, like on a service like Hulu in ways that we haven't thought of yet.
Right.
Maybe there's like something more that you can do with that.
And Hulu Plus, which is awesome.
Oh yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have been bummed if they were like, here's our first original content. It's not on Hulu Plus. I'd be like, what the fuck?
Thanks for nothing.
So. At least they did that right. But yeah, so check it out. It's called A Day in the Life. It's available on Hulu Plus right now. The second episode's coming out this week. I think they air new episodes every Wednesday. They're doing like a TV type schedule where it airs at a time or a day or something where it launches. So check it out. It's pretty worth it. I think the second one's going to be better than the first.
Awesome.
So there is that. The next thing we have up is also a show that's kind of unique in how it's done.
Yes. Internet.
Internet TV.
The dawn of internet TV.
And speaking of Comic-Con.
Yeah, and speaking of Comic-Con. So we finally, if you listen to the last episode, I completely missed watching the show I was supposed to watch to review. But we finally all caught it. Scott caught up on season 4 and 5.
I think I had seen 4. I had to watch.
You just didn't remember.
We're on 5 now.
We're on 5 now.
Oh, I had to watch season 4.
So you watched season 4 and 5. Ash and I had been watching it, so we just watched season 5. They're 4 episodes in of The Guild.
What are you guys thinking of it? How are you liking it?
Who do you want first?
Let me just say my opinion.
Okay, there you go.
And then I'll let you guys chime in. I was at the panel at Comic-Con for The Guild, and they showed the first episode, and then I caught some of the subsequent episodes at home. But I love The Guild, but the first episode, I wasn't into at all. I feel like almost like they're trying to go too big. Like what I loved about The Guild, it was kind of an intimate look on different personalities of gamers. Like you had like, you know, the punk
like cartoons,
kid.
Like everybody like drawn to the extent.
Oh yeah. But those people are all so real, you know, like Blades. Like I had, you know, in my World of Warcraft guild, I had 20 kids that were identical to Blades. And it was just like, you know, seeing that character on the screen was like, okay, I know exactly what that person's like. And of course, like Vork, you know, and I feel like, hopefully, I think I'm only on episode 3, but hopefully as the season progresses, they get back to that, which is the heart of the show. Like, I feel like they kind of lost a little bit of their center a little bit with bringing them, like, for those that don't know, they're bringing them to a big convention and there's all this stuff going on. They don't have a place to sleep. And I was just kind of like, it was just kind of like a, I don't know, almost like a clusterfuck in the first episode, I felt like.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of the show. I have the comics too. I collected all the comics that they put out in the one series and stuff. I feel like the same. I feel like what is interesting is that when you take these personalities, these kind of, I mean, yeah, they exist, but they're still somewhat overblown personalities of each character type. And you pull them out of this tiny little world that they're in, and then you put them in this big world, all of a sudden they feel like cartoons now, and they don't feel like I feel less like, oh, I'm watching a show about these gamer, you know, types, and more like, now I'm watching this like weirdly acted, like everything seems overblown now because they're around a lot of normal people who are just walking around playing games. Like,
yeah,
it was weird. It pulled me out. I feel the same. Like, I just watched it the whole time, all four episodes so far, with a few exceptions. There are moments that I'm like, oh, that's exactly the guild. Like, that's the way it should feel when I'm watching the show.
Yeah.
And there's a lot where I'm like, man, this is just off-putting. Like, I just feel like it's not what I'm used to. I don't know.
And no offense to, there's like a girl who's like their guide.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the first couple episodes.
Right. She's a little over.
Yeah. Over, and I think she's supposed to be, but like, it, to me, it was like so jarring. Cause I mean, granted, like, I think that the actors in the guild are actually pretty good actors at what they do. And yep. like, she was just kind of like a little bit much for me. No offense to whoever you may be.
I think now that you guys have said something, what I was going to say was that I don't quite understand what this show wants to be. And I think like, with what you guys said, it probably should be maybe what the first season was. But now that you've said this about how they go into a bigger world, it kind of reminds me of, you know, like when Saved by the Bell, like they leave the school and then they start working at the beach house over the summer.
Yeah.
Like, and they're in a different place and you're like, this is weird. Like, Zach Morris isn't like, he's cool. I mean, he's not bananas. Like, he's different now. It's weird. Yeah, you know?
No, it takes them out of their environment. And I just remember, Saved by the Bell tangent, but there's like episodes about them playing like volleyball.
Yeah.
And it was just always just really like, what is happening?
I mean, you know? And they've also kind of segregated off the characters in this one. So everybody's in their own little corner somewhat. There's moments with like Felicia Day and the creator. Have you seen any of that yet?
I don't think I have.
The newer episodes.
It's the last two episodes.
The creator of the game. The game. Person that makes the game.
Oh, really? Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well,
the nameless game. Who is playing the creator of the game?
I don't remember his name, but he looks crazy familiar.
Okay,
I'll look it up while we're talking. But those are moments when that stuff happens. I felt like, oh, the guild. Like, this feels right. Like, this is how the show should work.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise, it's been really scattered. I don't know if it's too much budget syndrome, which might sound weird, but
it could be.
But they now have an actual budget somewhat. I mean, it's not huge. They're not making, you know, raking millions in, but it's definitely a lot more than they had season one or two.
Yeah.
Or three even probably.
But that's the thing, is that I like the show and I like the characters, and I think the strength of the show is the characters.
Absolutely.
And you know, like you said, by taking them into a larger world, like it takes, like the characters lose something.
Yeah You don't, it's the type of show where you don't need to take them to a big convention, you don't need to have a scene with a Winnebago, and you don't need all that stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like in the old days, in old shows, like for instance, I'm gonna use a terrible reference, but like the Brady Bunch, when the Bradys like went to Hawaii, I don't know if you ever remember that. It was weird to see them out of that house. Like, seeing the Bradys like in Hawaii, like running around on a beach, you're just like, what is this? The Bradys need to be in the fucking house.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. And just like Saved by the Bell, those kids need to be in school.
They need to be in school.
Even when they went to college, it was weird.
It's like, I think the guildies need to be plopped down in front of a computer, communicating via headset. And there doesn't need to be like this, you know, road trip adventure. I don't think that's what the base of the show is.
I guess maybe this is the season where they work at the beach house over the summer.
And yeah.
Season six will be like back at home.
Probably,
cool,
depending on how the fan. Know. I mean, other fans may love it. And, you know, I'm not. The fact that, you know, Kim Eevee and Felicia Day can get this show made, and, you know, Felicia Day writes it all herself, which is ridiculous with everything else that she does. That is amazing, you know, and they are like pioneers in web video. So like whatever they fucking do,
totally.
I'm going to watch.
Yeah.
But I'm, you know, I think we're as semi-professional nerds allowed to say this isn't our favorite.
Well, I mean, but I think just the fact that we can be critical about it. I mean, we love it. And I think that's why we can be critical of it.
Yeah, I agree.
And I mean, like, of course, we're going to continue to watch it, and it's excellent.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, it's even with the gripes that we have, it's still the best, like one of the best web series, yeah. TV shows. Although, interestingly enough, now that I think about it, with somebody like Morgan Spurlock essentially stepping into the same exact space with an actual budget, this, yeah. it's going to get weird, I feel like. I don't know.
No, I agree.
But I feel like the quality of the show looks great. Mm-hmm. They even have like some weird special effects that end up looking pretty good. Like, it's not going down in quality. It just feels like a weird misstep. It just feels like, what are they, like, where are they headed right
and
now?
And speaking of special effects, the end of season 4 was very unexpected.
Which and one? What is the end of
that's
season
That's where
four?
They, like, appear in their guild hall.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
oh,
I was
yeah.
like, huh. Yeah. Like, I waited a whole season to see this, and I'm kind of, I like it.
Yeah.
I'm into it. If this is how it's going to end, I'm like, yeah. this is what it should be.
You yeah, know? I like that as
and,
well.
And that was great. Like, those moments where it's like, where somebody starts to say something and they're like, say it in game. And they're like, oh, sorry. You know, like,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that, I thought that was cool. And their dance sequences are freaking insanely great. Like when they do the dance videos. Have you seen those yet?
I did
the
see add-ons. Some of those yeah. dance videos.
They're really
yeah.
good.
Those are good too.
Yeah.
So I think overall, you know, still the guild.
Yeah.
Just kind of early on in the season feels a little weird waiting to see where they go.
Yeah. We'll probably review so the entire season at the end.
We'll revisit it. Yeah.
I have faith. I'm not worried.
I mean, she's an awesome writer. She's pulled off multiple comic books now that are all great.
Yeah.
So.
And she doesn't have to worry about her Eureka time interfering with this anymore. Man.
Well, they're still shooting. I think they're shooting right now, but yeah. after this, you know, no more. So sad.
So sad.
So time did permit, Ash.
Oh, sweet.
Let's talk okay. about podcasts.
I ran into this one the other day via Twitter. I follow both Aisha Tyler and Zachary Levi on Twitter, and I saw them kind of tweeting back and forth about being on this podcast, and I was like, oh, cool. I didn't know Aisha Tyler had a podcast. It turns out she does, and it just launched last month. I think they're in their fifth or sixth episode, so it's still a brand new podcast. The concept's kind of cool. It's called Girl on Guy, and it's literally her with some dude that she admires. And the couple episodes I caught, one was Adam Carolla from, you know,
yep.
from Man Show
and the Adam Carolla podcast and Love Line and
yeah and all that stuff
done.
And he's, you know, super big on the web as well. And the other was Zachary Levi, and I wasn't gonna write an article and like plug it because it doesn't really need to. They already have like a bajillion more.
Aisha Tyler doesn't need
no
plugs.
It doesn't need plugs at all.
That's so weird.
You know, already infinitely more well known than our own podcast,
you know.
But
I heard this new podcast called Nerdist.
Oh, no, I know. But have you guys heard of that? What a great name. But
go ahead,
sorry. So I was really, really happy with this. And not, I mean, okay, so the quality is really great. It's really well put together. She's really funny. You know, she does stand up and things like that. But the thing that really struck me about her and the podcast she did with Zachary Levi is how nerdy these two really
she's
are.
She's super nerdy. She's a gamer, like a hardcore gamer.
Hardcore. Like, yeah. they, you know, they talk, it starts out them talking about Hollywood and things of that nature and careers and, you know, and all that stuff. About halfway through the podcast, they just freak. They start talking about GoldenEye. They talk about GoldenEye yeah. for like a half an hour.
Yeah.
They start talking about Halo, which you guys would really love, and they talk about Gears, and they just like basically gush about all this nerdy stuff. And then they get into about how badly they were picked on as kids growing up,
yeah,
and
oh,
like
cool.
what their childhoods were like. And that's one big thing that she likes to do on this podcast is she has, I forget what she calls the segment, but it basically has whoever is on talk about the moment in their life where they're like most ashamed or most embarrassed with themselves. And it's actually really good because it talks about, you know, just bringing up all this old dirty laundry. But definitely check it out. It's called Girl on Guy Podcast with Aisha Tyler. Really funny. I think they're about 90 minutes. Really, really well done and super new. So it's only about a month old. So check it out.
Yeah, I've seen her. Damn, where did I see her get interviewed? She got interviewed on, it might have been G4. I don't think it was. It was something along those lines. And she started talking games. And it was like, oh my God. Like, she is hardcore
oh,
gamer.
Yeah.
Like, into everything. Big into shooters, like we talked about Halo for like, I don't know, like yeah. 15-20 minutes. Like,
she actually, she talks about, she does the voice awesome. Of the female Marine
in Halo
Reach.
Yeah, yeah. In Reach.
It's ridiculous.
Because they got her and what, like Nathan Fillion and a few other people to do all the voices.
Which is pretty cool. So definitely check it out. It's something I stumbled across this week.
And she's hilarious too. She really
is. She's really funny.
She's super funny.
What I do have to say, since now we are on episode 33 and we are like consummate professionals.
Right. Of course.
They're still at the stage in that podcast where they talk over each other constantly. And it's something you learn podcasting that like it takes a long time. Like you have to finish your sentence and then Matt might chime in.
Well, I mean, I still do it.
But not as much. And, you know, there's just a lot of talking over. But I mean, that's, you know, growing pains. Now that we're pros.
See, since nobody can see us now, they don't know that we instantly just go to our phones or our computers and ignore what everybody else is saying.
Oh, yeah.
I'm what actually, Scott's doing right now. That's why he's not responding.
I was actually, I wasn't 100% familiar with Aisha Tyler. And then I had to, so I was looking for my link.
She subbed on The Soup for a while and she did a bunch of other stuff too.
It's, for me, it's Archer is the most recent
Archer,
thing.
Yeah, she's the voice in Archer, which is an awesome show. Archer's hilarious. God, she's done a lot of shit.
She has.
But yeah, awesome. I'll have to check it out.
It's good. You guys
looking
like
for some new podcasting.
She's a fast talker though. She's like almost Micro Machines fast. So she gets about like 3 hours of content in about 90
an hour
minutes.
And a half.
It's crazy. No, she's so if you're into fast talkers, you'll love it.
All right. Well, we're going to take one more break and come back and talk. We got plenty of time to talk about game endings.
All right.
So if you do not want to hear spoilers about any games, we'll try to warn when we start talking about a new game. But if you don't want to hear about any games at all, you know, thanks for listening. Yeah. We'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week.
Otherwise, we'll be back in just a minute. Hello, Internet.
Welcome back to the podcast.
So... we're going to...
Was that your Allie Hillis impression?
Oh, no. Maybe.
Welcome back to the podcast. That was my Allie Hillis impression.
That was horrible.
That was much different from mine.
Yeah. Oh, mercy.
So Scott and I went to watch a Bucks game the other week at a Dolphins bar.
that didn't go so well.
Surprisingly, they didn't have the Bucks game on TV. So we sat outside... having a drink and talking, and one of the things we started talking about was how Scott just beat Borderlands.
Okay.
And he brought up the ending.
Or lack thereof.
Of that game. And then we started talking about how game endings, we feel like we could have a conversation, bring back an old thing that we have not done in a while, do a real open thread about game endings, what we like, what we don't like, good ones, bad ones, why they're good, why they're bad. Just kind of dissect the idea of why designers do what they do when it comes to game endings.
Or why they don't do shit.
So we sent out into the wires a question asking for your favorite game endings. We got some answers back, so we're gonna share those. And then in the time that we're talking about those, we're also going to talk about what we love about game endings, what we don't. You know, I already kind of know, we all know each other's somewhat favorite and least favorite game endings, but... I think this can span any generation of console. I think you can talk about whatever you want here.
All right.
And we'll just open thread it. We'll start it now.
All right. So let me ask Scott this.
Okay.
What game, just before we dive into our Twitter buddies' answers, what do you think is your favorite? What do you think your favorite ending is, to put you on the spot?
I've talked about it before, but there's one that has always stuck with me, and that is the ending to Super Metroid.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and because spoiler alert for 10 years ago, but at the end of Super Metroid, you are fighting Mother Brain, obviously, and there's a point in the game where you get beat down, and I don't think that happened a lot back then, where like you had the appearance of being defeated.
Yeah.
So you appear to be defeated, and as Mother Brain is about to finish you off, a baby Metroid that you rescued earlier in the game, comes up and like saves your life, and you know, attacks Mother Brain, like sucks a bunch of energy out of her, and then the Metroid transfers the energy to you, and as it's doing that, Mother Brain like kills that Metroid. So at that point, like you see this like creature die in front of you, the one that you save, and it's oddly emotional, like for the time. Yeah. And then when you basically stand back up again, like Samus is like super powered, shoots like this laser beam. It's like rainbow colored, like laser cannon or whatever.
Yeah.
And like every shot like sends Mother Brain's like head like rocking back and forth, like whiplash back and forth. And she's like, bah, bah, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, it's wild. And I think what made that extra special for me is that when I got to that point in the game, I had a friend over, like a kid that I was friends with in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And he was like excitable. So he was watching me play, and he like when the Metroid died, he was like screaming. He was like, no.
Yeah, and it's like a big deal, especially when you're younger, man. Yeah. Like,
and
yeah,
like I remember we both like jumped up on our feet, and I had the controller in my hand. I was just like, die, you bitch. I hate you. Blah, yeah, yeah. You know, and then like you kill her. And then like in classic Metroid fashion, the end of that game is like 3 minutes to escape, like get back to your ship and leave the planet. And like for me, that was always kind of like a cool ending to a game.
That's
like,
awesome. Yeah.
It was very unexpected because, you know, like luckily, you know, back then we lived like sort of in an era without spoilers, and you didn't really get to see game footage and stuff like that. So everything was.
That's true. You had to actually get there.
Yeah.
Yourself. Yeah. You know, without, yeah.
So it was a big deal.
Awesome. I mean,
so that's always
that's
the
a
one
great
that's,
answer.
That's the one that stuck with me.
Yeah.
Does somebody else want to share? Do we want to go to the Twitter wall?
You want to do a few Twitters, then we'll kind of interject our own as we
fine.
Go.
Sure.
All right. Midtown at Midtown 583, Justin Banks. He says, Dead Space had a great ending where you think everything's over finally, and then you get that last second scare. Again, this is going to be spoiler laden, and I beat Dead Space 1 the day before Dead Space 2 came out, because I really wanted to play Dead Space 2. And I managed to make it all the way to the end of Dead Space 1 without reading spoilers about the scary ending. And it scared the shit out of me. I agree with him, man. That, like, it's very rare for a survival horror game to actually scare me.
Very unexpected.
But holy fucking balls, man.
Yeah. I have a funny story to tell about that, too.
Do it, please.
Jen, my wife, like, she doesn't like horror movies, like she doesn't like that weird, like especially the spooky ones where like the girls are all like pale faced and everything.
Yeah.
So anytime she saw me playing Dead Space, she's like, oh, I'm leaving the room, I hate this.
Yeah.
And she was in the room when I finished Dead Space, and I was like, oh, the scary part's over, like I killed the monster, it's cool, the game is ending. And she's like, okay, I'll sit down for a second. And she saw that part and she's like, I hate you, this part
well, just
sucked.
Spoil it, because I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Well, like
I don't have the nerves to play that
game. Well, Dead Space, as you know, Matt, it's really, really psychological, and a lot of the horror takes place inside Isaac's mind. So everything's over, all the terrible shit's happened, you finally get off the fucking planet,
you've been like trying to track down your girlfriend or like the whereabouts or her or what's happened to her. And I think you find out in the game that she did she die or
she committed suicide. Yeah, she committed suicide. So it's a really dark,
so he's
dark,
like haunted by her.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so you are on a ship and you're finally flying away from this planet, and like pretty much credit music's rolling, shows you at the console, right, just sitting there finally taking a deep breath. And
you gotta
like,
get on the mic.
You take a deep breath as Isaac, and then like on the right to your right is like your girlfriend like kneeling on the ground, just like staring up at you.
Creepy.
And then she just screams like really loud, and then the game cuts out, and you're like, what the fuck was that? It's
totally
so creepy.
That's like Event Horizon level.
Yeah,
yes.
It was
shit.
Totally Event Horizon.
You
totally
are not safe.
Totally fucked up. Yeah.
Wow.
And that sort of stuff continues to Dead Space too. So
what else do we have on the old Twitter wall?
The old Twitter wall, the wall, which is the computer screen.
Yeah.
We have Kittler C, I believe that's how we say his name, a funny gentleman who wrote us last week. He says, he has a couple. We'll do both of his. He says, Super Mario Brothers, Princess is in another castle. What? Fuck you. Rage quit. That's true. I kind of forgot the Super Mario's ending was not really an ending at all, but keep on playing.
Yeah.
So that's kind of very, very
old
school.
That's a Nintendo ending.
That is a Nintendo ending. Yeah. So I'm kind of glad we've gotten away from that a little bit.
Yep.
The other than Borderlands.
Yeah.
I non-ending ending.
I like definitive endings where something at least kind of happens. So good answer.
But for reals... Kittler C says the ending of Braid got to me, the non-secret one that is.
I never actually beat Braid.
Oh, I don't. Should we ruin that one?
Yeah, we're ruining everything. It doesn't matter. This is spoilers.
Did you guys finish Braid?
No, I didn't. I did watch that.
I had
one rapper.
Xbox Live glitched on me and kept resetting my game every time I turned it on, so I just never beat it. I was like, oh well.
Well, this is going to be super spoiler then.
Yeah, it's fine.
Pretty much what is happening in Braid is as you go through the levels, like you're learning this story about a guy who has done something wrong, and like it's weird. Like it's kind of like the writing is sort of emotional and it's like not very clear what's happening. And so like the guy is like, oh, I did something wrong. I'm trying to set things right. Like, I don't know if we can make this better again and this whole thing. And you, when you get to the last level of the game, and I don't know what they're saying about the secret or non-secret one, but the one that the ending that I got was in the last level of the game, you are, and you know, there's like everything is time dilated or whatever.
Yeah.
So at the last level of the game, what appears to be happening is that you are trying to save, quote unquote, the princess from like this big guy. And so like the girl is like running away from this guy, and you're like, she's on a top part of the level and you're at the bottom part of the level. And you're kind of like doing things and flipping levers and like moving pieces so that she can continue to run like through the level, you know, she can escape from this guy. And you get all the way to the end of the level, and then you run the level in reverse. So when the level runs in reverse, what you see happening is that he is chasing her, and like the guy is actually like her true love. And so the Braid character is now, when you run it in reverse, he's putting up walls to stop her. He's like creeping in, like it. I think it starts with like, it ends with him getting up to the window to save her. But when you run it in reverse, it's like he's looking in the window at her with this other guy.
Oh, okay.
And then he's like running away as she's running out of the building, and he's putting up like roadblocks and like pushing things in the way so she can escape. And so like when you run it in reverse, you realize the whole time that he's the one that's like chasing her, but she like doesn't want to be. And like it's the other guy that she wants to be with.
And we've all been there.
Yeah, and it's like a totally kind of surreal ending because, especially as far as gameplay is concerned.
Yeah, yeah.
First of all, you run it one way and it looks like something. You run this level. It like takes like 2 or 3 minutes to run it.
Yeah.
And it totally looks like something else. And I was like, this is brilliant.
It's genius.
Know?
That's awesome. Yeah, very cool. Good answer, Kittler C. And I knew nothing about that.
Hopefully I got that right. I'm sure someone will correct me if I got the story wrong. But
so
I'm sure they will.
So, So, Ash, had you thought about this question ahead of time this time?
Yeah, I did. And I think that you guys are pretty much going to be able to nail mine. But I had a very strong emotional connection to Mass Effect 2, as you guys are probably really sick of hearing about after 33 podcasts of me talking about it. But there was something really, really awesome about the suicide mission and all the effort that went into building that team, that speech at the end. And I think it's one of the first games where you're working towards, and I know you didn't like this initially, you're working towards a definitive goal, and that goal is build the team, do the suicide mission. You know from the first hour of the game that that's what the mission is going to be, right? But the ending of the game is essentially the last 2 hours of gameplay, from the time when your crew gets captured to... you know, to the actual...
Or 5 hours if you're me and just fly
just
around.
Just kind of fly
mining
around.
The planets and finishing up what you want to finish before you go over there.
Let poor Kelly get turned into glue.
Those motherfuckers.
But oh, man. Poor Kelly. God. She's so cute, too. But anyway.
Dance for me. awkward.
Yeah. So, that to me was my favorite game ending of all time because, you know, and then at the end, you know, when you accomplish that suicide mission, if you manage to get everybody,
or two people,
two of your crew members survive, you know, and there's a scene when the camera's kind of panning around and you're walking through the Normandy and everyone's looking back at you. It's just incredibly emotional because you're like, hey, I managed to make all these different characters survive, and the characters were so well written that they were actually like, you know, by that point after, you know, 60, 70 hours of gameplay, they have very definitive personalities of their own. So I felt really, really connected with them and with that ending. So, and of course it's not the final ending cause we have Mass Effect 3 in March.
Yep.
So that's my answer.
Hmm. Do you want to do a couple more Twitters and then?
Yeah,
go ahead.
I don't have them in front of me.
Oh, okay. So the next up, the next up is Tolly Cuffed or Tolly Cuffed. Let's say Tolly Cuffed because it kind of reminds me of Matt's old name.
Who, for the record, is a female.
Yeah. So Tolly Cuffed is a lady by the name of Victoria. And her answer is Fear 2 because you got fucking raped.
Which is true.
Which is true.
We heard about this ending at PAX because we did not actually get to
have
the
ending.
Have
you guys ever seen
two.
This ending in Fear 2?
No, I never did.
Okay, I haven't played it. So.
But I know that the ghostly lady, Alma or whatever, the weird paranormal, rapes you so that she can have a child at the end of the game.
That's totally reasonable.
Which is
right?
The beginning of Fear 3.
Totally makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything
yeah.
happens in very quick succession in the game. There's no like big breaks between the games from what I understand. Like right. one goes right into two, two goes right into three.
Yeah.
Okay.
So and, Alma is pregnant in three, which yeah. is making their world's realities kind of shatter, which is yeah. kind of crazy. So yeah, that is, yeah, I want to say probably the only game ending of all time where the main protagonist is raped by
a woman.
An evil lady.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't really know what, I mean, I've never played it, but I can't yeah. imagine the sense of accomplishment when you get to the end and that happens and the credits roll and you're like,
yeah, you know, yeah,
I did it. I won, you know,
I do yeah. have to say, just to give props to, the guys that made Fear 3. I'm not going to spoil the ending to Fear 3, but the game ends on like a crazy, crazy note. You just like a crazy, crazy ending. And the credits are set to Danzig's mother.
Oh, wow.
Which is just awesome. You're just like, I've never seen a game ending like this yeah. before. So I think the guys that make the Fear games are really good at endings.
Yeah.
So good. Good for them.
We had the Sound Defense. Wrote, probably have to say Metal Gear Solid 3, very epic and emotional, manly tears.
Manly tears.
And the ending of 3 is when he fights, I'm going to look it up really quick.
3 was the flashback.
Yes.
3 was the flashback, the Cold War era. Mm-hmm. So you're actually playing as Big Boss.
Yeah.
So... yeah, I haven't played that in years, man.
I haven't either.
I want to say 5 or 6 years, but I remember you fight the giant Metal Gear.
It's when you become Big Boss.
Okay, it's when you become Big Boss.
Yeah,
you
find out that you are Big Boss, that you've been playing as him the whole time.
That's right, that's right.
And
I got to say, 3 was probably my favorite one. I played through that one a bunch of times. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Hold on, so... Oh, it does a cutaway, and Snake shows up, and he goes to Arlington National Cemetery, and then Big Boss is
one
of the grave markers.
That makes sense, yeah.
And then I think it goes black, and you hear Ocelot on the phone, and that's the end of the game.
That's right, yeah. Ocelot Revolver, yeah. Man, here's my problem with the Metal Gear series. I love them. I think they're brilliant games, and 4 was just so like
I have to play it still haven't
so
played
so crazy just so there's so much going on and it's almost just like someone took like Hideo I'm probably saying his name wrong but Hideo Kojima somebody took his brain and like shook it and then he made the game because it really is just like it's crazy all yeah. the stuff that's going on. It's really kind of cerebral and bizarre but still good.
Well, this leads into mine.
Oh, awesome.
So I had a hard time. I was thinking about it, and I had to actually. Scott started saying paragraphs of information about the ending of the game. I was like, "Oh shit, I don't know that much about that." So
yeah,
I looked
yeah.
up my ending to make sure I was right. I have two.
Okay.
I can narrow it down to one if you really would like me to.
Two is acceptable,
but they're yeah. different reasons
depending on our time frame.
Well, name them both, and then maybe describe the one that you want to describe first.
Well, they're for two completely different reasons.
Okay, sure.
For pure challenge sake, and I beat this game. And I did use the cheat code, but I didn't use it in the way everybody else used it, was Shadowrun on the Genesis. I played that game endlessly.
Really?
Endlessly.
Super old school.
Yeah, it's really old school, man.
It's so fucking hard. It is the hardest game I've ever played in my life. And there was a cheat code that everybody used so that you could actually beat it. You could get like $1 billion or you could like not die or something. And I think I took endless ammo. So I could fire things at people.
Sure.
And then I'd always make the hacker, and you'd hack through computers and get all the way through. But it's this huge, the ending itself is like this weird, there's like Indian spirits and you're fighting a corporation. Shadowrun's a very odd universe. And,
okay.
But I loved it. I just remember feeling like it was like the most accomplished I'd ever felt after beating a game at my house. You know, I had the hacker soundtrack on the whole time. I was just playing Shadowrun endlessly.
Awesome.
Awesome.
So that was challenge factor, but I think the first, dude, I listened to that quite a bit when I was growing up. The first game that I played that gave me like an oh shit moment that I remember being like completely like holy shit and like watching it was the first Metal Gear.
Okay.
When you find out that Liquid is like your brother essentially, and then there's like all this weird shit that happens afterwards, and like what's his name shows up and kills, or what's his name shows up to try to kill you and then dies right afterwards, the Gray Fox or whatever.
Oh yeah, yeah. The
just
ninja.
It's just like this. It's like I think it's the first. It's probably the most coherent Hideo game that exists. And like when it got all the way through, I was just like, holy shit, what the hell did I just watch?
And I think the Metal Gear games were the first that really succeeded at being cinematic.
Oh, yeah.
Like they were the first that we were like, holy crap, like I am pretty much taking part in a movie. Even though now the gameplay is just like, holy fuck, how did I play
this?
I see
you like to play Konami games. Yeah.
It was the best. I remember my parents, because I was, when the first one came out, it was probably like 96, right?
90. Yeah, that sounds about right.
I was still living at home because I was a teenager, and my parents, I remember coming, my mom like coming in the room and being like, are you playing a game? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm just like watching like nothing, because it's just one of the many cutaway scenes.
Yeah.
I'm just like watching the game, and she's like, you're not doing anything. And I'm like, no, it's a cutaway. And she's like, what are you? Are you watching a movie? And I'm like, kind of. It's good. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, that game, I think that game, after that just kind of like epic battle, because you fight that two-legged mech at the very end, and then Liquid shows up and you fight him, and then he dies all of a sudden, and then you find out he's your brother. It just was like one after another. It felt like Lord of the Rings, where it just kind of kept ending.
Oh, yeah, it was crazy.
And I loved it. That was probably my favorite. I mean, well, I can still say it's probably one of my favorite games of all time. You know, it ranks way up there with Mass Effect and Half-Life. So
it is pretty damn amazing. I agree with you.
It was hard because Mass Effect 2 definitely... I just feel like that's so recent, it's hard for me to judge it as equally as I can judge Metal Gear, or as equally as I could judge like the feeling I got from Shadowrun and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to kind of go classic, I think.
I concur. Those are good answers. All right, so who else do we have on
our list? We have, Dr. Gar.
Dr. Gar.
He says he listed a favorite and a least favorite.
Oh, okay.
Favorite Portal 2, and I'm not going to talk about it because I don't want to spoil it for you.
Oh, me?
Yeah, because I want you to play Portal 2.
Yeah, I haven't played it yet either.
Oh, well, then we're definitely not going to talk about it.
Is it good?
Portal 2 is amazing.
Is the ending good?
Let me see if I can recall.
Because here's the thing. Portal 1's ending. Let's talk about Portal 1's ending.
What is the ending to Portal 1?
You escape.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because the cake is a lie. And that's the thing that every stupid nerd kid repeats to you 100 times. Oh, yeah. Now.
Right.
And I just, like... I feel like that ending was built up so much that I got to it and I was like, oh, okay. You get out. Like, it just was like, sure, whatever.
I mean, I don't like, I guess, I don't know what I can say about the ending because I don't remember it. So maybe that says something in itself.
There you go.
But I feel like with Portal 2, it's not necessarily the destination as much as it is the journey, I guess.
Okay.
You know, because... You know, you like the humor, you like the writing, like the voice acting is good. Yeah. Like, those are the reasons you play it. The puzzles are smart, like, they're enjoyable. Like, the story is, you know, like, orders of magnitude, like, more, like, has more depth than the first game. So, I mean, like, as far as the story and everything goes, Portal 2 is amazing.
Awesome.
And then I guess we can all talk about the least favorite.
Let's talk about his least favorite. Yeah.
Red Dead.
Not talking about Red Dead Revolver. Talking about Red Dead Redemption.
It's oddly, I'm still okay with this. I know a lot of people hate this ending.
I'm in the camp of being okay with it simply because, and I know we talked about this like 25 podcasts ago, but it was one of the only times in gaming history where I put my controller down, I stood up, and I clasped my head in my hands, and I just said, "What the fuck just happened?" And then my wife was laughing at me because I had a total like nervous breakdown, and I had to explain to her.
I still maintain that it's not that the ending is bad. It's that it shouldn't be the ending. It's that it ruined the game in a sense to me. I'd rather have seen that same exact scene play out in Red Dead 2. Like, in the very beginning of Red Dead 2.
Oh, you've said this before. If this was beginning...
Yeah, if this was the beginning of Red Dead 2, that would have blown my fucking mind. I would have like, turned on, gotten ready to be like, I'm going to go shoot some more stuff, and, like, turned on the game, and then been like, what the fuck just happened? Like, if that was the beginning of the game, I feel like it would have ushered in his son so much better. I would have been so much happier about playing as his son. And instead, what it felt like was a fucking rock star way to kill off a... Be like, shocker, got you at the very end. And you're like, oh. Because the whole game, it got so heavy-handed with, the way of life is changing. You're part of the old guard. You're not part of the new guard anymore.
Right.
Everything's changing around you. Get used to it. Everything's changing. You're dying. You're part of a dying breed. And I was like, I get it.
Yeah.
He's the old dude that's not supposed to be a cowboy anymore.
I feel like they kind of, like, they... It's like, I'm gonna play devil's advocate for a second. Yeah. I feel like they kind of, like, lull you to sleep with all of these, you know, like, round up the cattle chores and all this stuff. You know what I mean? And I when I got to that part, I was like, what am I doing? Is this the end of the game? Did I actually beat the game? Like, what the hell is happening?
I still think they did a cut and paste number, and that originally was the tutorial, and then they moved everything around.
Really? But it didn't feel wrong.
I really did.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah,
I agree with that, but I don't think it felt wrong tonal wise. Like, I felt like that was kind of cool to go back and be a part of your family and just, like, you're just hanging out doing, like, regular chores. Yeah.
I think, I mean, like, if I was going to say something positive about what they're doing, I think they're trying to be like, hey, like, your heroes are not immortal. And
right.
Like, this is, like, too bad. Like, and this is what happens in the real world.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean?
I agree. I like I said, I don't think it's a bad ending. I don't think that the game, I don't, like, story-wise, I think it makes sense. If this was a movie, I'd be like, that was awesome. You know, like, what a way for, like, a guy to go down at the end. But, at the same time, we're not watching a movie. I'm playing a game. And what they asked me to do was watch the guy I've been building as a story for 30 hours die and then play as some quick replacement son all of a sudden to continue out the damn game.
To me, that was more annoying just because I hated his voice.
Yeah. It was like they just were like, quick swap. He's the same. And then what killed me more was, like, I think I would have been even happier if they were like, and you're done.
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't get to finish everything. And they're like, sorry,
yeah,
it's over.
I would be okay with that.
That's not what happened. Instead, now you're his son, and you can still do the same shit that you were doing as John.
Same missions are still open and things like that.
And I was like, "What? That just it didn't make sense. Like it just felt wrong." And
it
was like,
weird.
It took
weird.
Some of that epicness away. Like, I think if they had shown up, shot him, it went black, and then the beginning was you as his son avenging his death. Like, that would have been something.
I think the reality is that they did such a great job, that Marzen was such an awesome character that secretly we're all just kind of pissed that they killed him. Well, that's really
agreed.
What it boils down to. I mean, he was just great.
He was great, but I agree with Scott. I think that's a great point that they're going like, look, your heroes aren't immortal. Like, they die, and he's part of the old cowboys who aren't supposed to be around anymore. You know, so he's gone.
I think they're going to kill Shepard. Mass Effect.
Yeah.
I do. I think for real this time.
for realsies?
I do. I think they're going to kill him.
Uh-oh.
Or her.
So, but I think that heated discussion can bring us into part of the open thread, which is, you know, let's talk about endings. Let's talk about decisions that we think these game designers are making in their endings. Why at the end of Red Dead does he die and then you play on his son, whereas in the end of, you know, I don't know. Let's think of some other endings. The end of fucking Borderlands, you kill a vagina monster that comes out of a hole, and then the game just ends.
Vagina monster that comes out of a hole.
That's a huge letdown. P.S.
But that's what happened. Like, there's some weird monster rose out of a vault that they've been talking about for 40 hours, and then you kill it,
and you don't get anything out of
nothing.
The vault.
Yeah. You don't
there's no loot.
So. Horrible.
There's like barely any XP at that point. I don't think you get money. There's like, oh, they give you some money, but at that point you don't need it.
Yeah, who needs it?
Like, there's no loot at all. You don't get to see the vault. Like,
no.
And then when you find out what the quote unquote the angel is, you're just like, as if you were supposed to be like, I'm so into this story that meant something to me, but
do you think that is a conscious decision on their part to be like, hey, this game doesn't end? Like,
I think it was just
keep
like,
keep playing. We've got plenty of gameplay for you to keep doing.
I think it was just like, hey, this game isn't about the story, even though like the story takes you through all the parts of the game.
Yeah.
Like, just keep on shooting because that's why you're here. Bring your buds in and like, let's go, you know?
No, I agree. I think it was probably budgetary. They didn't, you know, there wasn't.
We do know that there was a last minute. They changed how the game looked and played.
Oh, yeah.
Like, pretty late into the making of the game.
Big time.
They may have had to make some story decisions at that point.
Sure.
And they actually revealed at Gamescom that Borderlands 2 is an entirely new engine from Gearbox.
Oh, wow.
So has, you know, it's going to look, you probably may have seen some screens already, but it looks really, really nice.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
So
me too.
I mean, are there any other games that gave you that kind of feeling that you were just like, what a weird decision?
What
at
a
the
weird
end of the
decision.
Game.
Let me just brainstorm for a couple seconds.
I don't want to talk about it too much, but L.A. Noire kind of like hit me the same way.
I heard it does a very similar ending to Red Dead.
You haven't beaten it yet?
I haven't beaten it yet. I don't want to say, okay, Cole Phelps gets killed, but I've pretty much heard that Cole Phelps gets killed and you play as somebody else, or something happens to Cole Phelps and you play as somebody else. I don't really care enough to like spoil it for myself, but if that's the case, I think that's kind of like, hey, it's becoming almost like a formula. You don't want to keep doing
that.
Rockstar.
Do they kill you at the end of any of the Grand Thefts?
No, but in the end of all the Grand Thefts, somebody's super close to you. Like, I know in Grand Theft Auto 4, which you guys will probably never play all the way through because you're not fans of the series. Grand Theft Auto 4, you basically like romance this girl throughout like the entire game, and like everyone's around you is a fucking scumbag and has betrayed you. Like the last hour of the game, they horribly murder her. And so basically you have nothing to live for at this point. Everyone's been killed. So the last hour of the game is just like you, just horrible, like murderous rampage.
But yeah. I mean, that is somewhat of Rockstar's thing. Like they do like to do these oh wow moments at the end of games. I mean, they've done it, I think, since they took over Grand Theft Auto. Their endings are always kind of like, you know, the Tony Montoya of
it's true
Vice City kind of thing.
I think, you know, in a lot of these games the ending's becoming much more important. I also think that games are being written now to be part of trilogies, which is kind of weird. I think that can be bad.
I think so.
Yeah, because you don't get the, you know, the grand ending unless they have a really good idea of what the entire arc of all three games is like, and then you can actually end them on different notes. You know,
it's like you're still waiting to hear like the complete story of what all that red shit on the wall is at the end of Assassin's Creed.
Yeah,
you know, it's like they probably put that up there and they're like, I guess if people like this game, we're gonna expand upon this, and if not, we're just gonna leave it right there. You know.
And that game has been written into already four games now. Like, I mean, they are seemingly just endlessly extending that game.
Yeah, but I remember...
Because it was a trilogy. That game was, we were going to do three parts. And now it's like, we're going to do three, but we're like on 2.75. That's not the same.
I mean, like, that game has like a bunch of story branches that are not explored. Because we've talked about it before. We're like, oh, maybe they'll go to Japan. Maybe it'll go to Russia. You know, maybe it'll be a World War II game.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
Egypt was a big rumor.
And then everybody was like, we like Ezio. And they're like, okay, we're just going to make more Ezio games. You
so
know?
The Assassin's Creed's a good one, though. One, I mean, the ending to one was like nonsensical. Just about, you didn't even know what the hell was going on. You ended it as Desmond, didn't you, like running around,
and he looks at he gets the eagle vision in the modern time, and he looks at the wall and he sees all the red stuff on the wall, and you still like, I mean, you kind of learn about that a little more in the next games, but you still don't really know like why.
But then two ends and like a god talks to you.
Yeah.
Like they got so far up their own ass at the end of two. I was like, what? Because I remember I beat it before you, and you were playing it next to me, and you were like, I think I've watched you end.
You watched me beat the game.
And I was like, hey, if you understand this any better than I do, let me know. And she's like, you're the one.
Yeah.
You're the blah. And I'm like,
the fucking dude, Ash is
like, Ash finished, and he was like, I don't know what just happened there.
Who is this Desmond? I don't know him.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's like so... I just like, I feel like that, like those are like the, I feel like those are the three extremes. You've got Borderlands that just ends and it doesn't give you anything. You've got, you know, Red Dead, which ends in a definitive way, but in a way that obviously divides people across different lines. And then you've got Assassin's Creed, which is like, it's like Halo to me, where they're so far up their own ass in story. You're like, I don't know what you're talking about.
How about the ending to Reach? Because ending to Reach is just you like gunning it out as long as you can.
Well, but I thought the ending to Reach was so simple, and so like they finally made it about Master Chief and about the team and about like that kind
of
thing.
I have to say, I really liked that. And you knew going into Reach that they were not going to live.
You're but like, everybody here is dying.
It was how they wiped the team out over the course of the game that was really...
I thought that was really good.
It was really good. And you really like, even though some of them went out like chomps, and some of them, you know, some of them I thought they didn't do that great of a job with, you know, ending these characters. There could have been a little bit more development, things of that nature, but it definitely had the most character and the most emotion of any of the Halo games, which is, you know, is why they call it Bungie's swan song. Like,
well,
this
because
is
Halo, all the Halo games are about the world. They're not about a character. Like, it's not like Red Dead is about John Marston and him in the world that he's in. Halo's not about Master Chief. It's about like the aliens and the Halos and the Earth. Like it's about the worlds that exist in Halo, not about the character, because the character is just your avatar to get through the game, essentially. Yeah, yeah. And Reach was the first one I feel like that it was about the team. It was about the guys who started the entire thing. And that last scene where your helmet's on the ground and you're just like shooting like crazy, just trying to kill whatever you can kill before it's all over.
I actually had it in my head that I was going to be able to survive. I was like, I'm just going to, no way. No one's going to kill me.
But it was awesome.
I think the first time we got there, I played it in co-op the first time.
Yeah, I think we all did.
We all did.
And that's, I guess, I was like you. I was like, well, it's four of us. We're just going to keep killing these guys. And then, like, slowly the whole team started to die.
Yeah.
Like, I think, like, one or two people were left. And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
This is what's happening.
Yeah. We're not going to quite make it now.
Yeah.
Then the cool robot girl with a robot arm gets sniped. And it was sad, man.
It was.
It was good. It was well done.
It was well done.
So I think like the thing that we're noticing as we are getting older is that story and great characters and great voice acting are all becoming an integral part of these games, which is awesome. And even though you kind of, you know, reflected back upon Super Metroid, the scene that you remember from when you were a kid is a very emotional scene.
The emotional ones, right?
So yeah, emotion, you know, and that's why we kind of play these. You play these to get that little bit of a buzz and to get that cool chunk of story. So,
and so we talk about Mass Effect and how much we love it. And we talk about how BioWare is so good at what they do and instilling story into games. They're really one of the first American RPG makers that just blows it out of the park every time.
Absolutely.
I have never heard you guys talk about Dragon Age's ending and whether it's good and whether you cared about it, whether it did anything for you.
The ending to Dragon Age 2, to me, I liked it. It was surprising. And like we've said before, it's very much a Empire Strikes Back kind of thing, where it's like what happened in that game was so unexpected.
Yes, absolutely.
Like somebody basically makes a choice at some point, and the choice like has a definitive impact on the world, and they're like, it's like you're like, there's no going back now. Like,
well, basically, like without spoiling anything at all, you can just say that like someone who is in the first game and someone who joins your party in the second game kind of has their own agenda that you don't really realize that they have. And then all of a sudden they do this terrorist action that is so terrible that it pretty much like rocks the world. It's like, what if your best friend decided behind your back that they just want to go and like not only assassinate the Pope, but like blow up the Vatican.
And he does.
And they get away. Oh, no. Scott. So that for Dragon Age 2 was pretty awesome because it was very unexpected. But
did one feel like nothing but a lead into the trilogy?
No. I think the thing about the two games is they both stand on their own. They're both based in the same world, but there are very few characters from Dragon Age 1 and Dragon Age 2, and you don't play as the same character from Dragon Age 1 as in Dragon Age 2. So the story about Dragon Age 1 is all about stopping this apocalypse called the Blight and killing the Archdemon. And if you beat one, you pull it off.
But it's pretty standard stuff.
It is.
Hey, there's a bad guy and there's something coming. There's
aliens
or whatever, and you have to kill them.
Ground aliens.
Ground aliens in this game.
Yeah, ground aliens. And yeah.
Stupid ground aliens.
And it was good, but it wasn't like, I didn't have that feeling of like, you know, ultimate accomplishment. I guess it's because that game is so open-ended about the type of person you play and things of that nature. So,
do you guys like games where we talked about it a little bit with Reach. Do you like games where you know the ending before you get into it? Like, you know, like if you were to play Star Wars, you know, like you already know the world and what's supposed to be happening.
Well, that's going to be about the journey then at that point. Like how the ending is sort of like carried out. You know, how it's displayed on the screen, I guess.
Because in Reach, I mean, we did all go into Reach knowing that there's no way all of them survive. Like, it's literally the point of the rest of the Halo games is that there's only one. So, I don't know. I mean, but yet we all talk about the ending. The journey was fun, but the ending was phenomenal, even though we knew what it was before we got there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I think, I don't know if I like to know exactly what's going to happen. And that's the problem with prequels, you know? It's like with prequels, you know where the heck everything's going to go. So I definitely like that element of surprise. But I don't think it's necessary. You know, it can be about the journey. It can be good.
If you were to give out a company who always pulls off a phenomenal ending, is there one that you could name?
Like other than BioWare?
Is that who it is?
No, I mean, I do. I know I've brought this up in like older podcasts, but I would give a nod to Remedy, who does Max Payne and Alan Wake.
Yeah.
Because the ending to Alan Wake, I think, is really good. And I mean, like, obviously it would have to be because it's kind of like a Stephen King.
If I remember, the ending to Max Payne 1 was actually pretty good, too, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And I got to give props to Resident Evil, all of them. Yeah. Because,
Four was so good.
Four was so good. And if you even think back to one,
yeah,
where Wesker betrays the stars and then the tyrant.
I didn't think about those games.
The battle with the tyrant, and you're like, whoa, there's all this betrayal and all this cool stuff going on. And then, you know, you're about to get your ass kicked and somebody throws you down a rocket launcher. That kind of stuff didn't happen in games in like 95, 96. So that was like a big, like, holy shit. Like, this is some, some real Hollywood kind of stuff, which I really liked. Yeah. So, good stuff.
Awesome.
As always, I also submit Heavy Rain. But the thing is that Indigo Prophecy didn't have a great ending, and Heavy Rain did. No, it took a really bizarre turn. But I mean, the ending to Heavy Rain could, you know, changes depending on how you play the game. But even when I got to the end, I still didn't know how the game was going to end, and I was still surprised.
I would submit for maybe not great endings, but always great cliffhangers, which is annoying at this point because they're so slow at doing anything else.
Sure,
is Valve.
Oh yeah.
Every Half-Life ends in a way that you're like, what the fuck? Like, right. You can't end like that. And it's just like, it just ends. And then you're like, there's a person right over there, they were dying. Are they dead? I care about that person that
you just
killed.
Next thing you know, you have Canadians camping out in front of the Valve base with protest signs, you know?
All right. Well, I think that's a closing to our open thread.
All right.
If everybody's good with that, did we get all the Twitter questions in or answers in?
I believe we did.
We had a little bit of a light week this week.
Sweet. All right. Well, that is episode 33.
This is probably going to be out by the time you hear this, but Deus Ex comes out next week.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That should be phenomenal. So hopefully we can talk about that.
Deus Ex, and then will it be out? No, one more week, and then the 52 starts.
Oh.
First week of September. DC's relaunch of every comic book.
I think that there's another game that comes out next week as well as Deus Ex.
I think we are starting to get out of the lull of the summer.
I think
and
next
we're
week is
have
when
some
it
games
begins.
Starting to
yeah,
come out.
Warhammer 40K.
Yeah.
Great. It comes out in like two or 3 weeks. So.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, we will see you next week. I think I'm on a cycle of about Wednesday, Thursday. These are coming out now because we have a few days to edit. And thanks for listening.
Good deal. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Hey, and go to iTunes and give us a rating or something.
We actually have been getting ratings.
Have we?
Yeah, I went and checked it after you tweeted that. And I was like, we've got like 4 or 5 reviews and a bunch of different star ratings.
Oh, good.
And we're starting to get people who listen to this also listen to, and it's like One Up and Weekend Confirmed.
Oh, awesome.
Other games. So
thank you guys so much.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, that helps a lot. We love getting that stuff. And then also, we talked about it earlier. We're working out a Facebook contest that I think everybody's going to like. It's fun, a little different.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Thank you, everybody.
Adios.
Bye.